the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars. We've got serial entrepreneur and combat CEO, Paul Ciardo. Thanks for joining us from New Jersey.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you. So you are a serial entrepreneur and combat CEO. First of all, what do you mean by combat CEO?
Well, think of combat CEO as someone who goes from the boardroom and you negotiate large deals working with mega clients, and then pretty much right after, to kind of relieve a little stress, I go into the gym and I scrap. So I actually teach Krav Maga and tactical awareness with different types of weapon systems. So I'm a full-time entrepreneur and professional martial artist.
Wow. So how did you get into martial arts?
So martial arts has been a big part of my life growing up. My kind of crazy dad did a little bit of it. And where I lived, I actually grew up in Irvington, New Jersey, which is it's a tough area. So you need to learn how to more or less manage yourself on the streets right away. So I had a few friends that did a little martial arts and learned a little as a kid. And then I was in the military for 8 years, learned some interesting things there with the Marines. And then when I got out of the Navy, I went into trying to professionalize it. So I learned how to focus on Krav Maga, Kenpo, Taekwondo, stuff like that. So,
and I know that you've said that martial arts have really helped you in business because it's taught you discipline and character. Can you speak to that?
Well, you got to think, when you're doing martial arts, it's like it really requires a lot of heavy focus. So you need to clear your mind. You need to focus on the actions that you're about to partake in. And you got to think, if your mind is not clear, if you're thinking about a million other things, what's going to happen? You're probably going to get punched in the face, you know? So so that's, for me, martial arts has really helped create that zen, that balance to where I can zone out from work. I can release a lot of stress and I could really learn to hone in on certain actions, bring in my mind and body, synchronize that and execute what I need to execute.
This is really interesting for me because I don't know much about martial arts, but I know a lot about yoga and meditation, which I partake
in. That's part of it too, though.
But I was just seeing the similarity there. I would not have known that. I would not have known that Krav Maga is so mental and that it's about the focus and there's the Zen component to it, because it's, you know, from the outside, it's so cool and aggressive. And
it looks cool, but it actually takes years of training to build a lot of muscle memory and instinct for the movements. So you got to think, when you're being attacked, most people, what do they do? It's typically a three-step process when you're being attacked. Step one, you freeze. Step two, you pee yourself. And step three, you pretty much get hurt. So so my goal was to, you know, build a more or less a tolerance to that kind of a model. So So it helps me in the gym and also in the boardroom. So when I walk into the boardroom, I take more or less a commanding stance. I know what I know, both mentally and physically. So
I've been hearing this theme pop up a lot lately as I've talked to entrepreneurs about the power of focus. And I feel like you would have something to say about that, since that's something that is so necessary in Krav Maga. And I feel like it's so necessary in business. And you're a serial entrepreneur, so I'm sure you're getting pulled in a million different directions all the time. But I'm sure you have to, in each moment, each day, each week, have that focus still, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's you got to think, for a young entrepreneur, let's frame it like this. I mean, a lot of people come out of, you know, their jobs. They say, you know, I would really love to do something different. I'd really love to bring this idea to market, whatever it may be. And a lot of times what happens is young entrepreneurs, what they do is they get flustered with ideas. So many times we go through and we have so many great ideas. We want to do everything, you know, right? So the thing is, you really only have 24 hours in a day. You know, you can really only optimize so much time, and it requires a lot of focus. So for me, martial arts has really helped me hone in on focusing on the things that really matter, the things that can drive the highest margins, the things that can really create the greatest efficiency gains. So from an entrepreneurial standpoint, whether you're working on one thing or many things, and I think that's a process of development, developing into having the ability to kind of multi-thread or parallel process, let's call it, with many topics. But in the beginning, it's focus. You really need to allocate time. And once you allocate that time, you need to focus on a given subject. And then when you start developing some maturity with handling multiple tasks, then you could focus on many things.
So what advice do you have for choosing what to focus on in the beginning?
So I would say many people focus on, so young entrepreneurs, many of them focus on, what do I believe in? What do I have a passion for? Okay. And many of them fail to understand the planning process. Okay. So when it comes to focusing on an idea or product or whatever it may be, yes, have a great passion. Have a
That's kind of the starting point.
Yeah, have an understanding of what you want to do. But the key thing is, don't just go and try to do something. Okay, you have to really sit down and plan. You have to understand the framework of what you're trying to accomplish. And a lot of entrepreneurs fail to take into consideration the hard work it takes to really bring an idea, you know, a product or whatever to market. I mean, many of them think, well, if I just do this and work really hard, something's going to happen. That's not the case. I mean, that's why you see so many entrepreneurs fail. You know, you have to sit down and really build out a business plan. You have to understand what the financial impacts are going to be. You have to understand what the true effort is going to be, you know, before you, you know, invest so much into the passion you may have. So,
yeah, so you alluded to business plan, and I have a lot of entrepreneurs coming in here that nowadays feel like maybe a business plan is less relevant because you're always pivoting as an entrepreneur, and you just kind of have to a certain extent, go with the flow. So what do you have to say about that? How what's the balance between planning and pivoting?
Well, you got to think, pivoting, you can pivot if you have a plan. So there's something called, I would call it agile entrepreneurship. Okay. So what that means is, you know, instead of sitting down and writing a concrete plan, okay, you have to sit down and write a vision plan, more or less. You have to understand what you're looking to accomplish. And you have to also understand all of the impacts that are going to affect you, such as what's the financial impact? What is the time it's going to take to really build this? What type of team you need? Because many entrepreneurs, they believe that, let's just go with the flow. What does that mean? You know, it's like going with the flow means you're preparing for failure, in essence, you know? Going with the flow without having a true understanding of what the vision is and what that roadmap looks like, I mean, you're setting yourself up for failure. So I would recommend you don't need a concrete business plan. You need a vision plan, okay? You need to have a roadmap that is going to adapt to different factors that you're seeing along the way, okay?
So everyone has a different definition of what a vision is in the context of entrepreneurship. What is your definition of vision?
Well, when I look at a business, so for example, the martial arts. So I'm sure you've read about this. I'm actually taking what I've learned from the martial arts standpoint and we've now applied it to building franchises. So we're actually releasing a new franchise called VMMA, which stands for Vok MMA. And it's dedicated to the person who actually instructed me in martial arts. So when I looked at that, you know, as a typical entrepreneur, you would sit back and say, wow, well, I know martial arts. Let me just go with the flow and I'll build these facilities. Yeah, that's one way to do it. But what I'm looking at is the 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plan of, I want this franchise to produce $100 million. How do you get $100 million? Now you have to look at, you know, what is the model of creating, you know, that $100 million target? You have to create facilities. You have to create a revenue stream, you know, and to create a facility, what do you need? You need an operations plan to build out each facility. And if I'm not going to be there running it, it has to be such a detailed plan that anyone can more or less run the facility. So we're really looking at, you know, financials, operations, team, marketing, go-to-market strategies per facility. So that's what I mean by vision. What is my overall objective?
Where are you headed?
And then
backwards.
And work backwards. So I think that's a really good way to put it is, what is my vision? Build your plan through backwards planning.
So the example you just provided was tied to a financial goal. Do you think a vision should always be tied to a financial goal, or do you think it can be more of an intangible goal?
Well, I mean, you got to think about it. I mean, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, I mean, if you want to go do art for a living, I mean, that's also going to have a one, you're going to have a passion for art, but you still may need to make a living. So you got to think everything's more or less tied to finance in some way these days. I mean, without money, you don't live.
Right.
So I would say that should be your foundation beyond even the passion. I mean, we could love what we do, but you have to know how to monetize what you love.
To support you, yeah, or you're not going to be able to do it.
Your family, yeah.
Great. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to dive more into your story, how you're helping businesses grow and become more efficient. So sit tight. So much more when we come back. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE, 844-91-BIBLE.
I weigh 320.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars. We are continuing our conversation with serial entrepreneur and combat CEO. And I'm going to add in a third title, Lifepreneur, which is something that you coined from really needing to be an entrepreneur and having that survival mode kick in. And that really stems from your background. You have a self-proclaimed rough background and childhood upbringing. So if you could share your story, I know you believe everyone has a story and we can use it for good. We can turn our obstacles into opportunities, right?
Yeah, of course. So first, let me just touch on the differences between a lifepreneur and an entrepreneur. So everyone would always say to me, oh, you're such a grand entrepreneur. It's so great. And the fact is, I wasn't always an entrepreneur. I developed into an entrepreneur. But I started as what I like to call a lifepreneur. So think of it to where entrepreneurs have a want-based motivation. You know, they want to create something. They want to bring something to market. Versus a lifepreneur is someone who is, who's been given, you know, put into a situation to where they need to create opportunity, to create, you know, money to maybe feed their family, maybe, you know, buy school clothes or pay the rent. So at a young age, I grew up with a pretty aggressive, abusive father who was an alcoholic and drug user. And, you know, by the time I was more, I think it was 17, we moved 26 times because of the chaos in my home, you know. And, you know, so just think we lived in Irvington, New Jersey, which is a tough place. And, you know, I've been through everything. I've seen everything with my the abuse with my dad. And at the age of 13, my dad tried to commit first degree murder on my mom, and he went away. And you know, I actually had a choice to go down, you know, this route or that route. And in the beginning, I wasn't always a good guy. You know, I wasn't always the you know, let's do it this way because it helps everyone. It was more, you know, I was probably a little selfish in the beginning. You know, trying to focus on making my way based on what I knew from family, you know? And I remember I had a situation at the age of 17 to where I was, it was highly recommended that I go into the military. And I chose the United States Navy, and it was the greatest thing for me because, you know, living a life without guidance, thinking you couldn't do certain things and you couldn't be someone, you start to believe it. And, you know, until I really made the choice to go into the Navy, that's when my life pretty much changed. You know, I got some real guidance and started being a hyperachiever. So
that was the key moment for you, because I know, you know, circling back to what you said, you had a choice where you could go, you know, this route or this route. So for you, being in the Navy really encouraged you to go the more positive.
Yeah, it was really the Navy. So it was I've always been that, you know, business minded person. But it was, you know, for example, when I was five, I didn't have any toys. So I figured out a way to barter with kids that had those. Remember those little G.I. Joe guys? I would create these paper Chinese stars. And I would bag them and I would actually barter to create a toy collection. You know, when I was seven, I started like drawing on pencils to buy my own school clothes. When I was 9 or 10, I started selling candy in school, you know. So it was always, I always had that business mindset, that entrepreneurial or lifepreneur based model in my mind. But it wasn't until 17 when I joined the Navy to where I really started to receive guidance on, you know, what is a team? What is honor, courage, commitment? What does it mean to, you know, progress yourself and progress those around you?
So what are some of those key lessons you learned from the Navy that you still incorporate into your life and businesses today?
Well, I would say the first thing is everyone has a story. And the fact is you go into the military and it's not this glamorous thing. People think, oh, well, I'm going to be this, you know, hardcore special operations guy. It's not what it
like
is.
Like the movies show.
It's not. Yeah, that's not what it is. I mean, the military it's an awakening to where you awaken and follow the rules and you progress, or you fail and you wind up being a, you know, someone mopping the deck in the Navy, you know, or whatever. So it's, for me, it was really the hardcore structured guidance that I received, to where it was, you know, my story, it wasn't the worst story. I heard even worse stories in the military, to where it was like, I would sit back and say, wow, stop feeling bad for myself and, you know, start realizing that I have a lot of opportunity here based on the structure that I'm receiving, you know, to where if I commit towards, you know, achieving a goal with the teams that I've been given or the teams that I've built, you know, my life could be that much better. So that's really what I learned, you know?
Yeah, when I think of the military, I think of discipline, which is so necessary in entrepreneurship. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say discipline goes a few different ways. I mean, discipline for your own core values, focus on what you believe in, focus on your passions. And if you set a goal, focus on achieving that goal. And you really need to create, you know, effort and time-based disciplines to where you can't go home and, you know that you have 10 tasks to accomplish. You can't sit down and play video games. You can't jump on TV and watch, you know, a show that has zero value. I mean, it takes a lot of discipline to really progress as an entrepreneur. I mean, you're not getting a paycheck anymore. You know, you're building wealth. You know, you have to hustle. You have to get off your butt. And you have to make it happen for yourself, you know? So discipline is, from the military, it was, if you didn't do what you needed to do, it wasn't about not getting paid. It was about dying. You know, someone was going to die if you didn't do your job, you know? So that really made an impact on me. And since then, it's always been...
Yeah, I love what you said about the need-based motivation because it is amazing. I think a lot of the most successful people were hungry. Yeah. You know, they really had to make things work. And when you're in that zone of, this is not an option, I have to make it work, you are making more strategic decisions to get there. Yeah. Would you say that's been true for you?
Absolutely. And you got to think, I mean, you see all these... I would call them wannabe mentors. You know, they're on Instagram and Facebook trying to guide, you know, the young entrepreneurs of tomorrow of, you don't need to go to school. You could just make quick money and do this and that. I mean, that's not what it's about. I mean, it's about creating a life plan, you know, understand where you would like to go, create stability, get a job. You know, most entrepreneurs don't become entrepreneurs because they quit everything and think they're going to go out and make $1 million, you know, selling Instagram photos or whatever it is. You know, most entrepreneurs are full-time workers, part-time, you know, entrepreneurs. So, and then they gradually go through this transition of building confidence, building structure, building a plan to where they can begin to execute, gain confidence, and then gradually focus on it full time.
I'm so glad you're speaking to this because I have talked to a lot of people who feel like you just have to take a leap of faith and you have to leave your job. And you know what? You know, to give them credit, sometimes that works, especially if you have some money to back you up. Yeah. But I think that's the exception, not the rule. The rule is what I think you're going to comment on right now. And that's that slow transition, right?
Yeah, I mean, take it slowly. I mean, you got to think you're not going to be a billionaire tomorrow.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for stopping by Business Rockstars on your trip out to LA. Have a safe trip back to New Jersey.
Great.
And thank you so much for all of your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by Asus.
If you've ever tried to buy tickets to a Sacramento Kings basketball game, you are likely interacting with Sarah Martinez, the Kings sales and marketing assistant. But what makes Sarah so special? Well, she's not actually human. She's AI, or artificial intelligence. Alex Terry from Conversica explains.
The AI assistant helps the Kings on a variety of projects. For example, with season tickets, group ticket sales, or selling of the suites, not to mention like pre-event things like draft parties, and even really ticket sweepstakes. And so any professional sports franchise has millions of fans. And so interacting with those millions of fans is a daunting challenge. And so AI is really the best way to have those personal one-on-one conversations at a very large scale.
More is at conversica.com.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by Asus.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Joining me today is Chris Shang, a growth strategist. It's great to have you back.
Thanks.
So entrepreneurship is a topic you wanted to discuss here.
Yeah.
What do you think it takes to become a successful entrepreneur? What are some of the ingredients? You know, people say persistence, you got to have the determination and the hard work and integrity. Yeah. What do you think? What are some of the ingredients?
Hustle and grind. Mm. I always revert to this quote too sometimes when people ask me about entrepreneurship, and it's from Elon Musk's first wife. And she says something along the lines of, you know, passion is what you're willing to sacrifice for 24/7. Right. And I think that's really interesting because it's ironic. It's his first wife and he's since gotten divorced since the second one. Right. So that to me is what it requires. And I don't think a lot of people really understand this, what that means. I think people think, oh, I want to go start a business. Let me find something I'm passionate about. And they think passion is like what's going to make them happy 24/7. But it's not. It's really like, what are you willing to sacrifice for 24/7? And I think that's the biggest differentiator.
So when you go into a business to help them grow, do you find that oftentimes the people in the business are not passionate?
You experience everybody from all spectrums, right? There's people who are anally passionate, right? Like they're just completely OCD about everything and things become a very slow moving process. And then there's people who are just not passionate enough and, you know, don't really, again, like understand product and what they're building and who they're building it for. And they're not empathizing with their consumer. They're just, sometimes they're in it just to make a dollar. And, you know, and I think that's, and then you have everybody else kind of in between. So
if passion is one of the most important ingredients to success in any area of life, mm-hmm. how does somebody either find their passion or reignite the passion within them? Because most people are not doing things they're passionate about.
Yeah. I think that comes down to really understanding what you're good at and being self-aware. I think self-awareness
is huge.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest things that people just don't address. And there's a lot of people, I think, that one, they want to start something and then they go ahead and they are not self-aware that they're not fit to do it. And then there's people who are completely, you know, have the skill set to accomplish it, but aren't self-aware enough to make the risk, right? And a lot of times that's the biggest thing that I hear is like, well, how do I keep making an income and then do this 100% and then ask for investors' money at the same time? And I'm like, you know, those are all the wrong questions, you know, and I think that's what it comes down to, is just being self-aware.
So let's talk about company culture for a second. As a growth strategist, you obviously have to go into businesses, and we were talking about people, product, and process, and how people is the most important component, because the product and the process, right, is just, that's, anyone can have great products and great processes, but great people is what differentiates. And I think having great people and being able to retain great people boils down to having an amazing company culture.
Yeah.
So what are some things that you guys are either doing in your businesses or that you've seen done in other businesses that have a thriving environment and company culture?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really, it's finding diversity, right? I think that's the thing that creates the best culture. Diversity in not just like ethnic background or demographic background, but like diversity in personalities. Because, you know, I never walk into a room thinking I'm the smartest guy. And if you are, you're in the wrong room. Right. And I think that's the same thing with whoever you hire. You should be always like bringing in people as part of the culture of like, that's complementary to your skill set. If you know more than the person, you shouldn't be hiring them. Like, it doesn't make sense. And I think, a lot of people, like, again, when I'm talking about the OCD versions of like people who are really passionate, I think they want to like understand a little bit of everything, and they think that they know more than some of these people. And then it creates a climate for difficulty to grow, you know?
So let's say we've got a guy, and let's just call him Steve.
Sure.
So we've got Steve, and Steve's incredibly great at what he does, whatever he does, right? Yeah. Doesn't matter. So he comes in our organization, we hired him, and Steve is amazing at what he does, but Steve is what we'll call a bad apple.
Sure.
Steve's poison to the company. Sure. He's negative. He's bringing down the other employees. He's always complaining. He doesn't even want to go on the company retreats. He's not in alignment with the values of the company culture and mission and purpose, but he's great at what he does.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Ask him.
Do you fire him? Do you keep him? Do you try to train him?
I think.
What do we do with Steve?
Exactly. I hear you. What I would personally do with Steve is I would sit them down, and, you know, nobody should be fired without understanding why they were fired, right? So I think the first thing is like addressing these issues point blank and empathizing. Like, I think perspective is such a huge, huge part of managing. I think it's a huge part of like just growing a company and when you're going to battle with each other. So perspective, I think going in and saying like, hey, Steve, this is what I'm hearing, trying to understand why these things are happening. Is there anything I can resolve? You know, maybe he's going through a divorce. Maybe like, you know,
you never know what's going on in his world, right?
You never know what's going on in his world.
Okay.
And that impacts so many things of what we do, right? On a daily basis. So,
first try to align with him and understand his model of the world.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if it continues to be an issue and it just becomes like it's a bad culture fit, now he knows why, you know, and it's not a surprise to anybody involved that, you know, it's just not fitting. And it's not like firing, but it's more of like, this is not a good culture.
Make a transition into a position that would
make
sense.
You can't be happy. You know, we're not happy. Like, let's not keep people who are not happy and let's just move on.
I like that. I think that's a good way to do it. Is there any quotes or sayings that you live by? I think a lot of the times, consciously or unconsciously, we are playing stories, playing sayings in our mind. They could be limiting. They could be, like we were talking about earlier, questions. People ask themselves limiting questions. What if I fail? Why did this happen? And so I'm curious, for you as a growth strategist, are there any sayings or questions or quotes that you live by and that inspire you on a daily basis?
I do. I mean, it has a curse word in it, but basically,
no cursing, but what is it?
Just effing do it.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I live by. I mean, I think it's just do it. I think Nike says it, but you know,
copying their slogan.
Sure. You know, but that's the thing. It's like, everybody's scared of they think of like the 10 steps down the road.
Yeah.
You may not even get to the 10th step. Right. So just worry about the first step and just do the first step. And
What if somebody's in their business or in their personal life and they're just simply limiting themselves based on where they're focusing by the questions they ask themselves? What do you do in a situation like that? It could be in the business. They say, hey, we're going to start doing new marketing. They say, well, what if it doesn't work?
Yeah.
And automatically their focus is asking, well, what if it doesn't work? And they're playing out all these scenarios. And just by doing that, they're automatically going to want to go back to, well, we've always done it this way.
Yep.
So I'm curious, how do you overcome that? How do you help shift people's focus?
Yeah, I think redefining steps and what baby steps might be and all that other stuff. Like I was just talking about like MVP and kind of really understanding what that might mean. But just really like taking things and scaling it down. And what does a first step look like? And then scheduling that first step. I think like actually scheduling it, making it something tangible. Of like, I need to do this. And it's like an executable item. Like even if it's just sending out an email to somebody, like I'm going to draft the email. And then on this day at this time, I'm going to schedule it to go out. And boom, right? It creates action.
Do you think companies are going to be limited in their growth if they have companies that allow people to work remotely, or does it not matter at all?
That's an interesting question, because I've been working remotely for one of these companies, and I think...
Some companies hate it. Yeah, some companies are like, we do not allow our employees to work remotely. Yet, by 2020, almost 40% of people are going to work remotely.
Yeah. I'm all for it. I honestly feel that, working remotely or kind of like working the hours that you need to work. For example, if Steve, that we were talking about is super efficient and he only needs 4 hours to get things done that he needs to do in his compartmentalized version of what he's doing, versus like somebody who is like going to the bathroom and taking breaks all day long and going like spend 2 hour lunches and like takes 8 hours, or, 10 hours a day to do what he's done. I mean, reward Steve, right? So like, I think that's kind of how I look at it. It's that it comes down to really the culture, and it comes down to hiring the right person with the right mindset. But if you do those two things well, then working remotely can be, I think it is the future. It's going to be the way that that people work. And mostly because I think it's just a higher sense of happiness all around.
Yeah, working remotely is definitely something that is going to be much more prominent as we go into the future. Chris Shang is our guest. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Chris Shang is a growth strategist. I'm curious, what do you do when you go into a company who has broken company values, culture, mission, and purpose?
You run.
Essentially, they're just running a business, but they're not creating culture. They're not having value alignment in their employees. They have basically no vision or mission or purpose. Because I've gone into businesses like that before as a growth strategist and consultant myself. So I'm just curious, from your perspective, what do you do? Do you even take them on as a client?
Try to steer away from that. I mean, if it's a toxic environment and,
sometimes they just don't know better though.
Sometimes they don't. And that's when it's like you go in and you make a proposal and you say, hey, we should be trying these things this way. But if the resistance level is like at a 10, then you need... I just feel
that's like the old school mindset.
Yeah.
They go, we've always done it this way. I've been in business for 40 years. What could you possibly know?
Sure.
So,
and it also depends on the business too, right? If it's a 30-year-old business and they've been doing things that way, maybe there's a reason that's been doing it that way. Maybe they've tried everything else.
So many things that people could be doing.
There is.
A lot of times they just give the excuse, oh, we've always done it. We've already tested everything.
Yeah.
And I hate that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess when I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking of more of like old school businesses. Like
that's what I'm saying. Like an old school business, but a lot of old school businesses are going to go out of business.
True.
We're seeing billion-dollar companies close their doors.
Yeah.
You should never be a billion-dollar company and have to close your doors.
Yeah.
You should, you look at like Blockbuster could have acquired Netflix, and there's many other examples of that. It's like, what? These companies need to be innovating.
Yeah. They should be. They totally should be.
And as a growth strategist, you got to go in and help them understand that.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to... Yeah, I mean, I'm taking it from the perspective of like sanity on both ends, right?
Are there any tools or resources that you use? Maybe it's a special app on your phone that helps you be more productive or more healthy or more organized. It could be, different things on the internet. Like maybe you go to a business and they're not utilizing Salesforce or Infusionsoft, which is a email campaign service to keep it simple.
Yep.
Are there any tools and resources that you use in your own life or you help businesses implement?
There's so many. I mean,
lay out some good ones and give an example of what it does.
Okay, sure. On my personal life, I love Flipboard just because I'm able to curate the content for myself and it's all applicable and it's where I get a lot of quick ideas and stuff.
Tips, tools, and resources from Chris Shang, a growth strategist.
Yep.
Appreciate you for coming on the show, brother.
Of course, man.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
What are some of the biggest time wasters to avoid in building a startup? Hi again, folks. I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. The most valuable resource for an entrepreneur is time. The following are what are known as time suck. Here's the big ones to avoid. One, avoiding rejection. Rejection is inevitable. Don't waste your time trying to make it perfect. Look at the no as an opportunity to learn and grow. Number two, going after big customers first. Approaching smaller customers first is a benefit because they typically decide faster and can give you practice for a bigger pitch. Three, assuming your team understands the vision. Fully communicate the vision and be sure the team and you are on the same page. Eliminate these time sucks from your workday and focus on building a successful business. I'm Pat O'Brien, and I'm out of time. This has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
When's the last time you checked your credit score? Those three-digit scores can have a huge impact on your financial life. Credit Karma can help you with free scores, free reports, and free monitoring. Credit Karma also gives you the tips, tools, and advice you need to understand your credit and how to improve it. You can even spot potential errors on your credit report. That can mean better interest rates on loans and credit cards, which can save you thousands of dollars in the long run. Signing up is completely free. No credit card needed. Visit creditkarma.com or download the Credit Karma app now.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty leaders and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its online MBA, Information Management, and Business Analytics master's programs. Learn more about the W.P. Carey business degrees online. For more information, text RANK to 79645. That's R-A-N-K to 79645.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
Business rock stars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. This is our CEO roundtable segment. Joining me right now are two rock star CEOs. Just to give us a quick one, who are you and what do you do? Give us the elevator pitch.
Hi, I'm David Dotkin. I'm the president of investment banking for ASMX Capital. What we do is we raise up to $50 million for growth stage companies across all industries. We work with both entrepreneurs, seasoned individuals, as well as we have a huge syndication network to be able to raise capital in a very efficient manner.
I love that. Thanks, David.
I'm Kevin Yamazaki, founder and CEO of Sidebench. We are a venture studio and an innovation lab for the enterprise.
Awesome. Thanks, Kevin. So let's get started. I'm especially curious to hear from the both of you. Just one of the biggest mistakes that's happened. Let's start with David. What's been one of the mistakes that you've had a huge lesson from?
I think it was thinking that everybody else would be on the same page as you. So when you're working with entrepreneurs and trying to get people to come in and see your vision of how you can help them raise capital or something like that, you generally run into situations where your timeline doesn't match up with other people's. So you run into situations where it's hurry up and wait a lot. And so when you're growing a business and growing your company, you have to anticipate a lot of that coming into your life. Also, in the world that I live in, I also work with a lot of regulators, so the SEC, FINRA, et cetera, and you can only work as fast as they can. So you can be ready to go, get your companies ready to go, be entirely ready to launch your product, and being told by the government that you have to wait a little bit.
I love that. Yeah. Hurry up and wait.
It's a lot of that.
What about you, Kevin?
For me, I think it's going to be really digging into the weeds in terms of looking at silver bullet type solutions. So creating a sales machine was something that was incredibly attractive to us. But for what we do, it really is based on relationships and networking. That's how sales happen. So hiring on a sales rep, right, and a business development rep and getting marketing going ahead of really that need and not a great fit for our market was a very large mistake that we learned a lot of lessons from.
What was it like for you guys when you first stepped into being a CEO?
Scary. Again, I think I've used that word quite a bit. For me, it was...
It's scary being an entrepreneur in general.
Yeah, not having a safety net and then realizing that, right, you are fully employing oftentimes people much younger than you, that rely on your business and you driving it forward for their livelihood. That to me was definitely the largest shock in terms of what my expectations were and just the pressure and the stress involved with that.
And you keep saying it's scary to be an entrepreneur. And yeah. One of my favorite sayings from one of my friends, Joe Polish, is successful people are moving scared. Unsuccessful people
like
are frozen stiff. And so it's okay to be scared as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, you have to be scared. You have to take risks. You have to put yourself out there because if you're not doing that, you're never going to succeed. You know, not doing anything is the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, from a management perspective, it took me a long time to realize that you have to empower your staff or your colleagues and everybody downstream for you to make decisions because otherwise you'll be managing from the top and there's not enough time in the day for you to do that. And so I try and say, okay, this is your job. Come back when it's done, or if there's a major hiccup, that's when you want to jump in as a CEO. But learning that took a tremendous amount of time and patience, and you'd be able to trust the people that you're hiring, right. And hoping that your recruitment processes work correctly, that you're getting the right type of people in there. And when you're not, then learning how to deal with that and moving people out at the same time.
What's something that's just either ridiculous or super like traumatizing or something really wild and crazy that you've done in your personal or professional life?
That's an interesting question. Do you have any?
I have a couple off the top of my head. I don't know if that's good or bad.
David's ready.
Yeah, but I've done a lot of traveling. I've lived all over the world, both for business and just for pleasure. And I've lived in China. I had a business where we were manufacturing in mainland China, and I would go there for months at a time and be the only white skinned person in a little village and having to go in these experiences where you go into a restaurant. And not to say that there's a cultural difference, but there is in China where you walk into a restaurant and there are cages of animals lined up against the wall and you get to pick out what it is that you want to eat.
Wow.
And without speaking any Chinese or having any ability, trying to figure out, okay, I want to eat something that I can at least recognize or I'm familiar with and hoping that it's the right thing, that it'll come out the way it is.
Yeah.
And that's just a crazy experience of in itself, just being like, okay, I know that I'm going to pick out a seagull or whatever this rodent thing is over here or that thing, and that's going to become dinner that night. You know, similarly, when you travel a lot, like you run into experiences which you're not necessarily prepared for. And I think that also steps into business as well. I was in an experience where I was swimming in a river with some other backpackers and one of them drowned, you know.
Wow.
It was literally, I was doing the exact same things as this other individual, and I was able to swim back into the bay, and this person wasn't. And then I thought he was going to walk up the river in about 5 minutes, and he never did. And that turned into a 3-day ordeal of doing a search party, getting everything there. And you're doing this in a different country with non-English speakers trying to explain what happened. And those are the types of experiences that really imprint on yourselves to how you'd become a CEO and how you would approach situations later in life.
What are some things that you guys do to condition yourself for success?
Yeah. For me, it's getting to sleep earlier and waking up extremely early. Incredibly simple and also fairly hard to condition yourself to do.
Because not everybody gets enough of it.
Yeah, but getting in the office before the sun rises for me is really when I get most of my work done. Right? Okay. The rest of the time, it's interacting with clients and the team and everyone else.
Mm. So you'd be proactive in the morning and a little more reactive later.
Right, and then time for mindfulness, really scheduling in meditation.
I know you practice meditation, which
is great. It's been very, very helpful for me. And having that combo in the morning has been great, but going to sleep before 10 p.m. feels a little strange still.
I agree. But then it makes it so much easier to wake up at 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And meditation, for sure, is something I'm practicing as well.
Yeah, I wish I could go to sleep before 10 o'clock at night. That would be amazing. I find myself doing the opposite schedule where I'm up till 2 or 3 in the morning most nights. But simply, for me, it's turning off my brain and figuring out a time at least once a day where I can just sit back and not do anything. You know, sometimes I'll use a video game or sometimes I'll read a story on the internet and something like that, because once I clear my mind and I'm not thinking about what's next steps in business or what I have to think about for the next week, that's when the best ideas come. People talk about when you're in the shower, you get these, well, that's because you're doing something that's completely antithetical to what it is going on in your day. But that's really true. You know, sometimes it's good to take a vacation and be able to do that. And that's when you get some good ideas. But for me, it's
completely
turn the brain off.
I love that. I wish we had more time, guys. This is a wrap. I appreciate you for coming on the show. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.